Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. I've agreed to meet adventurer Alistair Humphreys at Swanscombe Station and walk with him towards the Thames Estuary to talk about his new book, Local. To be honest, I've never been to Swanscombe Station, and as I found out later, nor had he. It's an area of the estuary that is less well-trodden. We certainly didn't encounter many people on foot. However, I was fairly confident that in Alistair's company we wouldn't get lost, as he's walked the empty quarter, cycled round the world, and rode across the Atlantic. So surely a walk of a couple of miles to the river wouldn't be our undoing. I'm on a concrete path running beside. Is this a stream or a drain?
I suspect it's perhaps a bit of both. It's a bit of a stagnant ditch, isn't it? And yeah, we haven't begun with the most scenic of walk. We've come past a lot of litter and dumping and graffiti and spiky fences, but it is becoming a bit more welcoming now as we head towards a marshland.
And thankfully it's not too arduous, because most of the walking you've done in your life has been fairly arduous.
Yeah, I've done some big walks in my life, which are verging on expedition-type walks. So I walked across southern India. I followed the holy Kaveri River from the sea to the source in India. Walked across Iceland, walked across the Empty Quarter Desert in Oman, and I walked 500 miles of Laurie Leake's violin busking route through Spain that he did in the 1930s, playing my own violin extremely badly. Oh, and I've walked around the M25 as well, so...
I spotted the walking around the M25. I thought, okay, that's nearer to my home. Okay, so why have you done all that?
Well, the reason I've done those was more just that I've, for many years, been really interested in travel and adventure and exploration and journeys and doing it in slow, human-powered ways. So I've also done trips by bicycle and rowing boat, and so really it was about trying to find adventures that were slow and simple, and walking's a brilliant way for connecting with the people and places that you encounter on a journey, as well as all the sort of physical challenge side of adventure, which I've enjoyed over the years.
So let's try and work this out, because certainly when I've sort of read about what you've been doing, it's almost as though you're putting your mind and your body through the mangle. And I want to know why. Why bother?
Why bother? Yeah, so my adventuring life, I guess from my early 20s, was very much began on the notion of physical challenge and mental challenge and pushing myself hard. And I think they were done on the basis of trying to learn who I was and test myself and prove myself to myself and all those sort of, well, slightly mad but perhaps useful things to try and do. So the start of my adventures was very much about that physical personal challenge, but over time, perhaps as I got some of that out of my system, it's become more about curiosity and noticing and learning about places, perhaps more than about myself as time's gone on.
So some of these expeditions you've done with others, and some you've done alone. But I'm assuming even when you've done the ones on your own, you've had a sort of support team, etc. Is that the case?
No, I've never had a support team for anything I've done, really. So I've done some trips by myself and some with usually one other person. And I think it's quite interesting comparing the pros and cons of walking journeys solo or with someone else, but no, there's never been a backup team. That's leaving aside the sort of money and hassle of it, that's also kind of missing the point a bit.
Okay, well, so what is the point of it?
In the early days, do I dare myself to go to an uncomfortable place and set a audacious and perhaps unrealistic goal, and do I dare myself to commit to seeing if I can figure out how to get from A to B and succeed at it? And that's the notion of the physical challenge, and then the fact that you have to be self-sufficient in unfamiliar landscapes is really part of the mental and cultural and testing your wits and all that sort of thing.
And a lot of it becomes terribly repetitive and constrained. No?
Yeah, it's really interesting that one of the reasons people like to go on adventures is to get away from normal life, because ordinary life is so boring and routine. And yet the irony is that adventures and journeys are incredibly repetitive and routine. Get up in the morning, walk all day, find somewhere to sleep. Wake up in the morning, walk all day, find somewhere to sleep. So yeah, they're incredibly boring and repetitive. But I think the weird thing is that the accumulation of the miles and the days somehow builds to being more than the sum of the parts. So you have to go through the hours and hours of boring trudge to get something a bit deeper and richer out of the journeys.
When we're doing this kind of walk around your local area, which is the topic of your latest book, what was your hope, you know, towards the end of it? Was it just to finish writing a book? Or was there something more? You chose 20 grid squares across your local map, both horizontally and vertically, so what, 400 square kilometres? My maths not very good. And you randomly chose 50 of them, I guess, once a week?
Yes, yeah, so I bought my local Ordnance Survey map. And wherever you live in Britain, you live on a Ordnance Survey Explorer Series map, which is roughly 20 kilometres by 20 kilometres, as you say, divided up by fine blue lines into 1 kilometre grid squares. And my project was once a week, for a year, go out and explore a randomly chosen grid square. And the randomness was really important because I guess, like a lot of people who like walking in the outdoors, if you show me a map, I can find you a beautiful bit of woodland. I can find you a lovely hill and a nice scenic walk. And there's a lot to be said for going out to explore those sorts of places. By choosing the squares at random, it forced me to go to areas of my local neighbourhood that are completely new to me, and places that I wouldn't necessarily have chosen to spend a few hours walking around. Like, for example, where we are today, a fairly ugly, forgotten, back-of-the-way kind of landscape. But I've come to really find these bits absolutely fascinating. We've walked past some sort of giant paper recycling facility, stuff that I know nothing about. So it's helped me get a much deeper connection with and understanding of where I live. And one reason I wanted to do that is because I've spent years literally travelling around the world. I cycled around the world for 4 years. And I realised that in many ways I know a lot more about distant countries than I do about my own backyard. So as someone who prides themselves on being a sort of explorer and curious, it seemed strange to me that I had no idea what was down the road where I live.
In your own backyard?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure whether you've really duped me here, because my podcast is talking walking, and yet practically every page I read something about getting on a bicycle. So, you know, I understand human-powered transport is your thing. Well, that's great. I'm all for that. And don't get me wrong, I cycle a Brompton, so I'm there with you too. But it did seem to me that you set off on the bicycle to get to the grid square, and then you just kept on the bicycle.
So what I would do is, most weeks I would cycle to my grid square just to speed up getting me to somewhere that's up to 20 kilometres from my home. So I'd cycle to the place, and then when I got to the square, it was a bit of a lucky dip, really. Some weeks I would cycle around the whole square, and in particular I did that in the more urban grid squares when I had to go up and down loads of streets. But I'd say more weeks than not, I would lock up my bike and then walk around the square. Certainly them I did. And I really appreciated the slowness that I got from the walking weeks. The fact that you can just literally stop instantly and pay attention to what's here at your feet and learn about that sort of thing. Whereas on the bike, yes, you're going quite slowly, but still there's the temptation to just think, that was interesting, oh, I'm past it, and then you carry on. So yeah, I'm definitely pro-walking as well as being a cycling lover.
Also, something that turned up almost in the last few pages of the book, which I found quite telling, actually, was that you said that your real problem was that you hadn't found anyone to accompany you on these adventures.
Yes. Which is why I now contact random podcast people to come and be my friend for an hour.
What I was going to say then is, well, give us the job description of the person that you would like to accompany you on such adventures around your local area or beyond.
Okay, so the and beyond bit I'll leave aside, because that becomes, I think, a different category of job description. But the job description for accompanying me around my local area is just someone who's interested to go and do that for a few hours, and I would literally leave it at that, because whatever different person you go with would have different interests and enthusiasms and motivations, and that would then encourage me to see things in a slightly different way. So yeah, that would be my only job description for the local version.
But to me it's quite telling, because you have done kind of solo expeditions, and yet here you are saying the problem you found reflecting on your year of travelling around your local area was you didn't have someone to accompany you. I have to be honest, each time that I go out for a walk with someone, I tend to be chattering with them.
Right, yes.
And yes,
missing stuff.
And yes, they do point things out to me which I wouldn't have thought of, yeah, or looked at. But then again, maybe walking alone is something even more valuable. Or is that something you fear?
Okay, lots to unpick in here. So I think what I was really talking about in terms of not having people to explore with was more of a general issue of friendship and loneliness and in the area where I live. Yes, going off for a walk with someone, they point out different things to you, but I also agree with you that you end up just nattering away about what was on EastEnders last night and missing stuff. So in terms of the actual project, I was really perfectly content going off on my own. I like spending a few hours walking around on my own, and it allowed me to not feel guilty about being eccentric about getting down on my hands and knees and spending 20 minutes looking at thrown away Lucozade bottles or whatever random stuff was interesting me that week. So I don't think that going alone is necessarily a problem. There's pros and cons of both.
From the book itself, what I took from it was that practically everywhere you walked was littered. and I'm kind of imagining that the Empty Quarter, or possibly the M25 was littered too, but the Empty Quarter wasn't littered, or wasn't as littered as much. Is litter something that, A, you have encountered a lot of, and B, what are your feelings towards litter?
So quite a lot of my journeys have been in wild and beautiful parts of the world through choice, so deliberate choice to beautiful landscapes. But also, there are ever fewer of those that actually exist. So, for example, I rowed in a small boat across the Atlantic Ocean and was amazed at the amount of plastic bottles. And I've also cycled across Africa, Asia, South America, and Europe as places that are strewn with plastic bags. They look like beautiful, colourful flowers trapped in the roadside bushes. Not beautiful, of course, but colourful. And I think there's just an issue in the world that when places are incredibly poor, there's very little litter because nothing is wasted. And then there becomes a small degree of income whereby then you get terrible plastic. And then hopefully a society gets to a point where it's then wealthy enough to solve the problems of its litter, which I think is why I find it extra jarring when I'm walking around Britain. I just see litter everywhere. I think this is horrible, and it's an eyesore, it's ugly, all of those sorts of things. But I think what saddens me more is the connection I feel with it in people being disconnected with the landscape. You have to really not feel any ownership or responsibility or love for a place to just chuck your rubbish out the car window. And as we saw this morning, in some corners of my map, not all, but some corners, there's just astonishing amounts of roadside litter.
So tell us a little bit about the really good spots that you discovered which you hadn't anticipated finding.
Well, that comes to interesting definition of what good is, because I found some beautiful places where I'd really enjoy to go back and ride my bike, mountain biking or running, or put up my tent or sleep in a hammock in the woods. Lots of beautiful woods and little hills. But to the sort of surprise I found in corners of my map that I would categorise very much as good would be some of the marshland, for example, down this area where we are, which is there's reeds, birds, little streams. There's also rubbish and graffiti and pylons and factory chimneys, but I really enjoy that mixture of the sort of edge land of sort of beautiful, sort of wild, sort of industrial, sort of forgotten and abandoned. And I haven't found anywhere where I live, in southeast England, none of it counts as wilderness at all, but I've definitely felt in some places, like the forgotten bits of marshland, a feeling of wildness, of peace and solitude and quietness and remoteness. So I've really enjoyed some of those parts of my map.
We're not quite away from the industrial scene, though.
Pretty much the entirety of my map, there is the background hum of roads, motorways, railways, And at night, there's the orange glow in the sky of streetlights. So even in the bits that feel like countryside, there's a reminder that it's not a very far away to the nearest motorway.
So what's next for Alistair Humphreys?
What's next is trying to work out what I should develop further from this year of exploring my local map. It got me much more interested and alarmed about issues of land use and nature loss and society's disconnection with nature. So I feel that I'm moving away from just encouraging people to go have adventures just for the heck of it towards trying to have a bit more adventure plus purpose. But I haven't quite worked out what the solution or the next step would be, so any ideas welcome.
So I'd be interested in how you describe yourself.
Right.
In as much that you go on expeditions, but you don't call yourself an expeditionary. You're an adventurer. But we don't often talk about going on an adventure, because an adventure gives the impression it's something frivolous. And yet going on an expedition, you have to work at, you have to plan, you probably have to train for. You encounter all sorts of awkwardness. So, but with an adventure, well, it could be an adventure just going to the shopping centre. Is that something you want to encourage?
So I think you're exactly right with your nuances of definition. And I think some of the things I have done have been expeditions. Some of them have been journeys. Some have probably just been trips. Some of them have been adventures. I'd never think of calling myself an explorer, partly because I'm not exploring anything, and also some of the connotations of that word just don't feel to fit what I do. And your notion of fun for adventure is probably part of why I talk about that, because a lot of what I'm trying to do is encourage other people to go on expeditions, journeys, trips, adventures of themselves. And I think the word adventure is more accessible to more people than expedition. If you say to someone, I think you should go on an expedition this weekend, it sounds a bit of a hassle. If you go on an adventure this weekend, that sounds quite exciting and fun. So it's perhaps semantics, but I think you're along the right sort of lines of why I choose the word adventure.
And would you like to give a couple of examples of what people might try?
Having said all of that, I don't really feel that my year of exploring my local map has been an adventure. It's been a journey, and perhaps to really tie myself in knots, it's been more of an exploration than anything I've actually done before, which is completely contradicts what I've just been saying. But I can't claim what we're doing here is an adventure. We're walking down a path on a marsh, but it does feel like a bit of a journey, and it's got that notion of newness and surprise and discovery of exploration. So I think what everyone could do this weekend, wherever they live, is to look on their local neighbourhood map and do so with an open mind. Don't think to yourself, oh, where I live is boring and rubbish, it's not very interesting. Be open-minded about the place. Poke your finger randomly at somewhere on your map and go there. And if you've never been before, you'll have an interesting journey going towards it, so long as you walk there with an open-minded, curious mindset. I think that's a really important part. The mindset you approach the project with is more important than the geography of where you actually go.
You are now talking at a time where most of my listeners will have lived through COVID and have probably walked every square inch of their neighbourhood.
I think that's a good reference, because I think the start of COVID was, for all its problems and bad stuff, I think a lot of people did find it quite interesting to, oh wow, discover that little bit close to home. And just because the pandemic's over, I don't think we should lose that enthusiasm for local curiosity.
So now I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask you to recommend a couple of walks. Now, they could be something completely conceptual, like, you know, I want you to close your eyes and, you know, imagine you're walking across the empty court or whatever, or it could be an actual walk.
Well, geography is a challenging thing. So one of the reasons in lots of my books I don't mention place names is because I don't think that giving ideas for journey should be a strict recipe to follow, i.e. go to this place, turn left at the gate. I think it's more useful to sow seeds of ideas. So I could say walk around the M25, but actually I think what I'd suggest would be to walk around your own hometown, wherever that may be. And if you live in a small village, then walking the parish boundaries or something, you've got a smaller day's outing ahead. But I think walking around where you live is an interesting proposition. If you get your local map, then just the limits of your imagination. So, for example, last week I went from the north pole of my map to the south pole of the map. And I chose that because north pole to south pole sounds like a great, grand, global expedition. And I was trying to suggest the idea that, yeah, it'd be great to go to the actual north pole, but assuming that you're a bit busy next week, then at least go from the north pole of your map to the south pole of your map and see something interesting along the way. But you could do a lot worse than just closing your eyes and stabbing your finger at a point within 3 or 4 miles from where you live, or whatever's a suitable distance for you, and go there just acknowledging that when I get to this random point, that's the so-called goal, but the, as they always say, you know, the rewards in the journey, those sorts of cliches, which are very true, I think. So point your finger on a map and make that your mission for the weekend.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Alistair Humphreys. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.